What up? Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of As Brock's Bengals Thoughts, presented to you by Impact Sports Cincinnati. And I am excited to announce that we have a new presenting sponsor. Impact Sports Cincinnati is brought to you by Dark Hawk Nutrition. Dark Hawk Nutrition is the next evolution in sports supplements. Their pre-workout protein and creatine, along with other products, are produced in FDA-approved facilities, third-party tested for quality, and are guaranteed clean. Use code IMPACT for 15% off your entire selection at darkhawknutrition.com. That's code IMPACT for 15% off of your entire selection at darkhawknutrition.com. So make sure you check them out. Fantastic stuff over there at Dark Hawk Nutrition. So we are back. My name is Chris Asbrock, and as always, I am your host. And as always, I am joined by Nick Cimino, as we are here to discuss a couple things Bengals related. And Nick, my man, how are you doing, buddy?
Not too bad. Not too bad, Chris. How are we doing?
You know what? The pain of the Super Bowl loss is kind of it's gone away. And, you know, it's time to move on. Let's go with that. I mean, it wasn't fun, but let's be real. One hell of a ride it was for our Cincinnati Bengals, man.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately, they couldn't get it done. This episode, I'm going to keep it real here. Last week, I'm not going to lie, I really wasn't feeling doing a podcast, you know, to kind of recap the Super Bowl. I know we needed to, but our original plan was we were going to do one to recap, and then we were going to do one kind of looking ahead to the free agency draft, that kind of stuff. But we figured, you know, hell with it. Let's just go ahead, and we're gonna kind of merge them in this one. Briefly, you know, we're going to touch on the Super Bowl. I mean, we have to. I mean, that was obviously one of the, you know, that's the biggest storyline that there is. Unfortunately, our Cincinnati Bengals, they experienced heartbreak again, man. 23-20 at the hands of the Los Angeles Rams. And, man, I tell you what, in front of 70,048 at SoFi Stadium in L.A. Or in Inglewood. And, it was a tough one. There's no other way to put it. It just wasn't our day.
The Rams found our weakness.
They
exposed it. So good on them. You know what I mean? They found our weakness and they exposed it.
Well, and here's the thing. When I'm talking about that, were there a couple calls, you know, that, you know, people are going to point to immediately, you know, from the referees. Yes, but they were bad on both sides. They were overall. I thought it was a relatively good officiated game.
Absolutely,
There were missed calls overall. It's going to happen. It's not the reason why this team lost. This team lost because the offensive line could not protect when it mattered most. But let's be real though. We kind of knew that was going to be the case. The first half, the Bengals did. I mean, they did a hell of a job in terms of keeping the defensive line at bay for the Rams. I mean, they did a great job of holding Aaron Donald, Miller, and Floyd all, you know, relatively in check as a defense. And unfortunately for the Bengals, it just wasn't meant to be. They did a great job of rebounding and took it to us after that.
Well, absolutely. I mean, in the first half, the Rams were truly sticking to their four-man front. They were sticking with the four-man front. So when you rush four and you put them up against five offensive linemen, your center can slide over and he can help double up on Aaron Donald. And that's what we were doing the whole first half. And it worked out marvelously. And that's why we were able to have time, throw the football. They weren't really getting to us the whole first half. And it was definitely an eye-opener for the Rams. So the Rams at halftime, they went in, they made their adjustments, and they said, you know what? We're not going to allow you to block 5-on-4 anymore. We're going to bring 5 men every time. So we're going to put 5-on-5. And when they put 5-on-5, it's you're putting your five best against our 5 best. And let's be honest, their 5 guys are probably better than our 5 guys up front. So Our guys, they did their best. They really did. I mean, we all knew the issue was there. I mean, we saw it against Tennessee. I mean, they played better against Kansas City, but they had already played Kansas City once, so they sort of had an idea how to block those guys. So they played better there. But then they turn around and they play one of the best defensive lines in football. And I mean, there's not many teams in the NFL that can hold up against the Rams. I mean, the only team in the NFL that didn't give up a sack against them when they played them was the 49ers. But the 49ers have a beast of an offensive line and they know how to play them. So,
I was going to say it's divisional games, so they play them
yeah,
at
they're
least
used to
twice a
playing each
year, you
other,
know?
so they know how to
Yeah.
block him. They know what to expect from Aaron Donald. They know his stunts. They know his moves. They knew Von Miller. I mean, they know everything. They knew how to play him. So, they're successful against that line. But other than that, I mean, every other team was getting beat, was getting sacked. So I mean, the Rams did do what they did. I mean, it's expected. Did I want to give up 7 sacks in a game? Not particularly, but I mean, even despite giving up 7 sacks, we had a chance to win that game. And just didn't they didn't roll our way. I mean, I know you just touched on the penalties, and I mean, I just want to touch on I think the main penalty that truly hurt us was when we're down. They're going down to score, and it's 3rd and 8, and Logan Wilson gets called for the pass interference
Yeah.
for holding. And I've watched the replay so many times, and I even watched it again today. He's not holding him. He's just has his hand on his back. There's no hold. Nothing. It's not like the Ramsey one where he's literally pulling on the jersey of T. Higgins.
Oh, yeah.
Logan Wilson's penalty was not a penalty. That was 3rd and 8. If they don't get that penalty, it's 4th down. It's 4th and 8. There's not going to be anything going on there. It's 4th and 8, and that changes the whole dynamic of their play calling, our play calling on defense. We could rush him. I mean, we especially when we played Kansas City, when it was 4th down and we went down on their end, we would blitz, and I think we would have done the same thing there, and I think we could have changed the game, but. Obviously, that didn't happen. Obviously, the penalties didn't go our way there, and it went both ways, like you said. The penalties obviously weighed a lot on both sides of the football, but
Yeah.
it is what it is. I'm not going to blame the refs because obviously they have to
No.
make those calls, and
Yeah.
unfortunately, some went our way, some didn't go our way, and it's we move forward.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing that my only gripe was, with that is the fact that it was when it was called. I just think in that situation, I think doing it at that point in time in the game, if you're going to call it, you've only called 4 penalties all game long, and then you throw, was it 4 plus, I think. In the final, that final drive, that's where I have the problem, because you're letting them play. I mean, hell, you let T. Higgins get away with murder on the when he took Jalen Ramsey down on that one. And again, it happens this game, and I saw something, people were saying the Bengals choked the game away. They did not choke this game away. This game
No.
was won by the Los Angeles Rams, their top players making top plays when it mattered most. Plain and simple. Cooper Kupp, when the entire world knew the ball was going to Cooper Kupp made the play. When you knew Aaron Donald was going to come in and wreak havoc, Aaron Donald came in and wreaked havoc. That's just part of life. Sometimes in sports, you're going to get beat. I still think the Bengals overall are a better team, especially when OBJ went down. That game was the Bengals to lose. In my opinion, as soon as OBJ went down with the torn ACL, the Bengals, that was their game to lose. Now, they did a good job of keeping everything, relatively good for them to hold on. Unfortunately, again, the big plays from the big players for the Los Angeles Rams, it happened. And one thing, and I'm going to kind of touch on real quick, was, everyone's going to complain about the Samaje Perine running the ball on 3rd and 1 twice. Now, I'm going to have a gripe with that as well, because I think, just like the Rams did, you live and die with your top guys. Joe Mixon is our top guy. Now, on the side note, I have to give Zach Taylor credit, because he came out and basically said the way that the package was, that they were running,
That was P. Ryan's
Samaje.
that was P. Ryan package, yep.
Exactly. So, they had a plan for it. I don't agree with it, but that's why he's the coach of the Bengals, leading them to the Super Bowl, and I'm podcasting about it. So,
And just remember, I mean, the same people that are bitching about why did P. Ryan get the ball are the same ones that were last week. Well, not last week, which would have been the week before against Kansas City, that was loving on P. Ryan when he caught the 41-yard pass for a touchdown that basically kept us in the game in the first half of the Kansas City game.
Exactly. And you, when you know me, I love Samaje Perine. You joke with me all the time that I'm a huge Perine guy. I am. But in that case, I'm putting in Joe Mixon because Joe Mixon had one hell of a game. You know, Joe Mixon had rushed for 15 times for 72 yards against that defense. That's an average of 4.8 yards per carry. So, you know, I mean, I'm sorry. I'm going to give the ball to Joe Mixon in that situation.
Oh, I mean, but that's, you know, we were in the Super Bowl. That ball should have gone to Mixon.
Exactly. And it's just like the whole Marshawn Lynch thing. That ball should have been, you know, handed off to Marshawn Lynch. You know, it's that kind of situation again, because the Rams did it. You know, they lived and died with their top guys. I wish we had done the same. And unfortunately, it just wasn't to be. You know?
I know we're going to get past the Super Bowl because obviously we're a couple of weeks on that. But I mean, if you're going to use Perine in that situation, the Rams were the worst team in the NFL against screen passes in the NFL. They gave up the most yards and they gave up the most touchdowns in the NFL against screen passes. Do you realize that the Bengals didn't call one screen pass against them the whole game?
Which baffles me because that was which we said, you know, right now, like we knew the offensive line was going to be their demise.
Yeah.
We knew that. So what do we say going in? Yeah. They had to run the screens, you know, draw plays, that kind of stuff.
And yeah, I mean, if you wanted to use Perine late in the game there on a 3rd-and-1, why not do a screen play right there? I mean, we hadn't done it all game. It would have been the perfect time to do it, but obviously, you know, too little too late. But I mean, I think a screen pass that with Perine there could have worked great.
It would have, yeah, I think so too. And again, unfortunately, it was just not
to be.
You know, yeah, it was not to be. But I mean, I just think the offensive scheme was the ultimate downfall, because of the offensive line play. When I say that, I mean, they didn't move the pocket enough for Joe Burrow, you know, via play action, rollout, stuff like that to get him out of that. You know, once you saw the Rams really starting to go after him in the second half, that's when I would have done that. Because you have to be able to adjust as the game goes on. That's what good coaches do.
Oh, absolutely.
You adjust as the game unfolds. We always joke about Marvin Lewis, how his lack of adjustments, you know, at halftime. That kind of was the situation in this one here, was just the way they did not adjust schematically in terms of getting Burrow out of the pocket and shifting it for him to give him a better chance of throwing the football. Because let's be real, Aaron Donald showed that game why he's the best in football. Aaron Donald is absolutely unbelievable. And you've got to tip your cap to him for all of that. That was incredible what he did. And that's where the Bengals, they failed the team. Let me rephrase that. I'm trying to think of the best way to put it. The Bengals failed everyone, themselves, I guess, is kind of – I'm trying to think of the best way to put it. By not doing that. You see what I'm saying? I don't think they put themselves in the best position to win that football game not adjusting schematically.
No, I mean, Aaron Donald was going up pretty much the whole second half, was going up against a guy who's a second-round draft pick, who's a guy who's literally been thrown in the second half of the season, Kim Adeniji. And let's be honest here. I mean, there's not many people in the league that are not going to say that Kim Adeniji is going to beat freaking Aaron Donald at a one-on-one. Donald's gonna destroy him, and he did it over and over and over. And there was never any help in the second half for him. There was no help. I mean, even if you have to bring in a six offensive lineman and abandon the tight end, we should have did something. But there was just no help at all. There was no adjustment to that whatsoever.
And that's my thing, is if you're going to bring in Samaje Perine, utilize him in those situations. He's a better blocking back than Joe Mixon is. So, you know what I'm saying? You got to utilize that. I mean, Burrow overall had a relatively good day. We didn't turn the ball over. So
no.
That's baffling. You know, we forced Matt Stafford into two interceptions. Matt Stafford was 26 of 40, 283 yards, 3 touchdowns, 2 picks, a rating of 89.9. You flip it over to Joe Burrow, 22 of 33 for 263 yards, 1 touchdown, no picks. He had a quarterback rating of 100.9. And, I mean, the one touchdown was the longest of 75. That was to T. Higgins. But, man, overall, the Bengals offensively, you know, outside of their woes, I think they did a relatively good job offensively. I mean, they, you know, in terms of, you know, facing, you know, the Rams defense, I mean, let's be real, you know, and the defense, once again, my God, played out of their mind again. I mean, the Bengals defense only gave up 313 total net yards in that game.
They could not run the football on us to save their life.
And who did we say in the preview was going to be the guy to watch? Cam Akers. If we can hold him, he was 13 rushes for 21 yards.
I mean, we were stout against the run. And I mean, and even Cooper Kupp, who's a big name player, I mean, what did he end up having? Like, I think about 95 yards he only had.
He had 92 receiving yards and 7 rushing yards. So he was held under 100 total yards.
That's enough. I mean, he even said it, that this is one of the toughest matchups he had all season long. And, I mean, to hold him below 100 yards, that alone is a feat.
Oh, every bit.
I mean, especially once OBJ went down, you know the ball is going to him. And we still, you know, we didn't allow him to, you know, blow up. So, I mean, we did our job. I mean, everything was good. I mean, but you know, our issue all season long was the offensive line. It was the issue last season. It's still the issue. And obviously we move forward, and this is where we start to address the issue in the offseason.
Well, Nick, I tell you what, as they say in radio, that, my friend, is a great, great segue. Let's do that. Let's talk about how this team is going to address what plagued them the most this year. And we knew offensive line play. Now we know that offensive line certainly needs to be upgraded. The Bengals have what I would like to call a crap ton of money to help fix any issues and plug any holes that this team might have. Like, when I say a crap ton of money, they've got like around 70, it depends. Depends on what happens. I will say around $70 million to play with.
Yes.
So
once Trey Raines is released.
Yes. So with that being the case, what are you looking at for this team and how they approach the offensive line? Let me rephrase this question here. What is your plan of attack? How would you handle it if you are Duke Tobin, Katie Blackburn, and the rest of the Bengals front office, including Mike Hilton? Catch that joke.
Oh yeah, I think the first thing they need to do is, and like I said, just because you got to prove that, you know, things have changed here. Obviously, because there's still people, you know, oh, the Bengals don't want to spend money and stuff like that. You got to re-sign Jesse Bates. He's key. Everyone knows it. He's extremely key. He's the leader of our defense. He's been there for years. He was, you know, obviously he wasn't drafted by, you know, Zach Taylor. He was drafted by Marvin Lewis. So, I mean, he's been here for a while for us. He's one of the leaders in the back end. He's respected. He's probably one of the top five safeties in football. He's amazing. You got to sign him right off the bat. He's got to come back. And then, then we need to turn our focus on, I mean, I know the Bengals always like to take care of their own first. A lot of times, but I think this year you really have to, on the same day when you're going to sign, you know, Bates, you need to start looking at the other players outside of our organization. Whereas, like, this is where you can look at a possible Brandon Sheriff and Orlando Brown, Taron Armstead from New Orleans. You can start looking at guys like this. Taron Armstead is the top tackle on the market. I mean, him or the guy from Seattle, Dwayne Brown. Yeah, Even the guy from Trent Brown too. Trent Brown from New England as well too. Those are your three top tackles on the line. All three of those guys are gonna demand top money. Can we afford to pay them? Of course we can. Do I think we're gonna pay those guys? I don't see that happening. I hope we do, but that one sort of scares me. But I think the Bengals are gonna be loyal to who they are. I think they like Riley Reiff a lot. I personally like him a lot still too.
Oh yeah.
I think Riley Reiff is a guy we re-signed. I think we can bring him back healthy, maybe come back to a 2-year deal, and he could be at a team friendly deal to bring him back. I think the one they need to focus on is Brandon Sheriff. I think Brandon Sheriff's a must. I think bringing Brandon Scherff over to play right guard and stabilize that line, put him next to Riley Reiff. And I mean, honestly, Riley Reiff against Brandon Scherff, I put them up against most guys in the NFL against their defensive line. It's good then. I think we're in really good shape if that's the case, if we get those two guys. After that, I think our focus should be on the defensive line. As we all know, I mean, Larry Ogunjobi and BJ Hill, they're both free agents.
One of those two have to come back.
Unfortunately, you're not going to re-sign both. So if you could have one, we all know we want Larry back. So I think you need to put money in Larry. I think Larry's a guy who's going to command. I mean, this is what I think. I think he's an $8 to $12 million a year type of guy. You're not going to get him for a team friendly. You know, 2 years, $8 million. It's not going to happen. He had a monster year. He played really well. I think you could get him for 3 years, $24 million. I think probably get, you know, $8 million a year, or 3 years, $30 million. That's where I think he falls, and I think he's worth it. And then the one guy who the whole rest of the organization and the rest of Cincinnati is going to be clamoring for, which I don't see it, and I just don't get it, is CJ Uzomah. As much as he, I mean, I know why you love him, and I know why everybody else loves him. He's a locker room guy. He's not a me first guy. He's all about the team. He's all about that. But with that said, he had a good season with Joe Burrow. He's going to command money. And personally, I think we could do just fine by either drafting somebody. I know Drew Sample's not the guy. I mean, but we also know that Joe Burrow is a big, big fan of Thaddeus Moss. Yes, he didn't play that much a season, but who knows? He looked great during training camp. He looked great during the preseason. He was doubly playing very well. So he's a guy, and I mean, they could draft another tight end and obviously save ourselves some money there, because I could see, I mean, most, if you go online, you look it up, most people are forecasting for CJ Uzomah to get, you know, $10, $12 million a year. I just don't see that. I mean, I don't personally think a guy who's just bringing back because he's a locker room guy is worth $10 to $12 million.
You might be right on that, but here's the thing. And well, let's go. I've got a list here of top free agents by position, top 10, or no, not even top 10. Top free agents by position. It's from wow. Let's try that again, Chris. Holy cow. I'm -3 right now, man. I'm not buzzing here. But it's from profootballnetwork.com, and Ben Rolfe, I guess, is probably Ben Rolfe is was the guy who wrote this. So in terms of top, he's got top 8 here in quarterbacks via free agency. We need a high-end backup.
True.
Because let's be real here, the way Joe Burrow has been getting hit, it could go terrifyingly down the route of Andrew Luck if nothing changes. My God, I don't want to see that. But, you know, it's always good to have a high-end backup. Andy Dalton's name continues to pop up. Andy Dalton has been a backup in Dallas. You know, when Dak was down. And then, you know, Dak obviously came back, and in Chicago. So, would you take a run at Andy Dalton, bringing him back here to be a solid backup under Joe Burrow?
I would love it, but you know, and I know he's not coming back here.
I was just, yeah. I mean,
I don't think he would want to come back here. Come back to the, he doesn't want, he's not going to want to come back to the organization that basically drafted him to be the, let's be honest, he was drafted to be the guy. Exactly. He still wants to be the guy, which he knows. I think he knows now he's no longer the guy. But I just don't think he'd want to come back here, even to be a backup. I just think it would be just too much on him. So don't get me wrong, I would love to see it because he'd be an amazing backup, but I just don't see that one.
What about Ryan Fitzpatrick?
He's injury prone now too, late in his career. And we don't need a guy we're trying to get a guy who's going to be a backup for Burrow, but just in case Burrow gets hurt. And Fitzpatrick's been tending to get injured quite a bit now. So I would actually pass on Fitzpatrick right now too, as much as I like him though.
Yeah. I was just curious. It was just a couple names I saw, and, you know, I thought about it, and I was like, well, it would just be interesting just to put it out
there. Now, a guy like Nick Foles, I would be all about. Garner Minshew, who's another guy. I mean, are these guys free? Either one of those free agents or no?
They're not on this list, but that's...
Okay, but I mean, I know both of those guys probably will pop up. I think those names will pop up during the offseason. I would take either one of those guys as our backup. I think they could be feasibly, they could come in, win, they could both win games for you, and I think they would be stabilized that position.
Yeah, I'd be fine with that. So we got receivers we don't need to worry about, running backs we don't need to worry about, we're good. Tight ends. Now, this is the one that it is interesting because, like you said, CJ Uzama, you are not a fan of, you never have been. So they've got him listed as number six here. There's 9 total names. They've got him listed as six. Mike,
Who are the five before him?
Mike Gesicki, Dalton Schultz, David Njoku, Gronk, and Zach Ertz.
Okay. Out of those guys, I would take – I mean, don't get me wrong. We'll all take Gronk, but let's – I mean, I would take Gronk
and Harvey. Price tag-wise, not a chance.
I would take Gronk and Harvey, but I don't think – I think his price would be more than what it would cost us for CJ Uzama. But that list right there, I would love Mike Gesicki. Or you know who's the one I would really like is Schultz from – if it's Schultz from Dallas.
From Dallas,
I love Schultz. I think he would be a wrecking ball here. I think he would be amazing. He blocks well. And I think he would just—I think he would give us a different flavor as well, too. I mean, I know you're a CJ Uzama guy, and I know why you guys like him, and I know why the city loves him. He did the photo bombs with everybody, and he's always behind people, and he's just—he became a jokester, and he became a guy who was laughable, and everybody loved him. But like I said, I mean, all that aside, the stats just don't add up to paying this guy $10-12 million. It just doesn't add up. I mean, I would rather take a guy like Schultz, who, let's be honest, right now he's coming off his rookie deal. He's no Travis Kelce. He's not George Kittle. He's not one of these top tier guys. He'll be willing to take anywhere between $6 and $8 million. I'm more happy to do that with him than I'd give. Like I said, Uzama's going to command a lot more money than most people think he is. Even though he's farther down the list, he's going to command a lot more money. One, because he's on a Super Bowl team. And two, his name got out there big time this year. So I can definitely see, like I said, he's going to command money. And like I said, most things I've seen, I saw most contracts showing him anywhere between like a $4 or $40 million contract. So, I mean, I just don't see that. And I mean, if he comes back and he comes back in a team friendly deal, I'm okay with that. But from what I've seen, I just don't see that happening.
I was going to say, who's to say he doesn't take a team friendly deal knowing where they're at. You see what I'm saying?
Oh,
CJ
yeah.
Uzama seems to be that kind of guy that would do that. I mean,
and he actually did the first time because the time his rookie deal came up, and Tyler Croft's rookie deal came up. They were trying to convince who was going to stay, and Uzama actually took the cheaper of the two deals. He got less money here in Cincinnati than Croft did when he signed with Buffalo at the time.
Well, there you go.
So, and now Croft actually has found his spot. He's playing in the Jets now, and he's actually the Jets' number one tight end, and good on him. And like I told you, I actually liked Croft better than – I actually liked him better than I liked Uzama when they came out when they first had him too. So, but – I mean, I guess my biggest qualm with CJ Uzama is that somehow he lasted longer than Tyler Eifert did.
Well, I mean, you're right. You ain't wrong. I just think I think the combination of the leadership in the locker room, he really galvanized that team as well. I think that is something you don't want to overlook. He was obviously the tight end is usually the security blanket for the quarterback. It's like that, you know, every team. With that being the case, I think that is one. Now, if he does command too much money, I'm perfectly fine with moving on from him. I am. I love CJ. It is what it is. I get it. It's a business, man. If
because
you want to get paid, take care of your family.
Especially if you
do it, man.
You would be okay if let's just say here. Uzama gets offered a 4-year, let's call it 4 years, $42 million. Okay.
My God.
Let's say Uzama gets offered 4 years, $42 million. let's say it's offered from the Bears, okay, because the Bears are a team, obviously, new head coach, everything like that. Okay, the Bears. Let's say the, no, not even the Bears, the Colts, okay? Because the Colts need a tight end now. They need a new one. Like they said, they're going to be on the outlook for a tight end. So if they offer him 4 years, $42 million, and then Gronk says, I'll come to Cincinnati, 2 years, $30 million, what are you going to do? You're going to take the 2 year, $30 million. Yeah, it might be $15 million a year, but over the life of the contract, it's cheaper for us.
Well, yeah, you're right. And you
know
can,
what I mean?
You can finagle the contracts too to where it's
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. So, I mean, but if Uzama is willing to come back for like another, like I said, like 3 years, $24 million for $8 million a year, I'm okay with that. But like I said, from what I've read and like I said, even Sharon and even, like I said, I mean, John Sharon and even all these other guys I've been reading, even Rappi, and said, he's going to get over $10 million a year. And I just, like I said, I hope it's not here. I mean, I really just hope we don't spend that much because we have other areas of need. And obviously, you could find a tight end elsewhere.
Well, now that you've completely shredded him, we're going to move on. No, I'm just kidding with you. You know, I always love.
No, I know. We can move on from CJ Uzama now. Okay.
Well, we are. We're going to move on to the offensive line. Now, this is obviously the one that we were. Well, not just we, literally everyone in America has discussed our offensive line. Let's be real. We have had 6+ seasons of bad offensive line play. The Bengals have an absolutely brutal track record of drafting offensive linemen, which you and I were talking about the other day. Hell, probably within the, like, since 2000, maybe three offensive linemen total have been worth a score to pee on it, you know what I'm saying? And that was Eric Steinbach, Andrew Whitworth, and Willie Anderson.
And actually, I'll actually one more. I'll add one more to that list.
Okay.
Even though he didn't stay with us for long, Zeitler was worth it. Zeitler was a good offensive lineman.
Kevin, yes, you are correct. Kevin Zeitler was great.
He should have never been let go, but he got a monster deal from the Browns, and obviously we weren't going to match it.
Dude, and at that point, good on him, man. Good on him. You know, get paid.
But let's be honest here. How has it worked out for him? Since he's left us, he's played for the Browns, the Giants, and now the Ravens.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's brutal. I mean, it is what it is. It's brutal. But, you know, here's the thing. If I'm the Bengals, and I know people aren't going to want to hear this, they're probably going to tune me out and think I'm an idiot. I am not drafting an offensive lineman and, you know, at all this year. Maybe not at all. But based off of our track record that this organization has, it is bad in drafting offensive linemen. We named 4 offensive linemen in 20 years. 21 years, to be real. Now, Jonah Williams, he's been good. He's been good. I mean, injury and youth have been what's held him back. And I'm not going to fault him for that. I mean, it is what it is. So with that being the case, you know, I'm not – jury's still out on Jonah Williams. I think he's good. But, again, jury's still out. With that being the case, I'm not drafting an offensive lineman for this football team in the first couple rounds. I'm not. I'm taking that money that we have – and I'm addressing it in free agency. Now, out of your 5 positions on the offensive line, no less than 3 of those should be up for grabs.
Mm-hmm.
I would keep Jonah and Riley Reiff. I think those 2 stay. But depending on what you do on the offensive line in free agency, and I'm going to read off some of these names here. And actually, there's 10 names. They've got 10 offensive linemen here. I think, personally, looking at them, you have to have 2 of 3. Or 2 or 3, I mean, of these 10 names. You ready?
Go for it.
Number 1 that they've got, and what I say, it's ProFootballNetwork.com, has Terron Armstead, tackle from the New Orleans Saints, is number 1.
Uh-huh.
Ryan Jensen, center from Tampa Bay.
Well, I
Orlando,
can.
Orlando Brown, tackle out of Kansas City. Brandon Scherff, guard out of Washington. Lakin Tomlinson, guard from the 49ers. Dwayne Brown from Seattle. Connor Williams from Dallas. Ben Jones from the Titans, and then two tackles, Jason Peters and Trent Brown from the Chicago Bears and New England Patriots, respectively. Again, you have to have two or three from that list, in my opinion. If you get two or three of those guys listed, you have hit a home run this offseason, and you have, no matter what you do the rest of the offseason, you've got an A from me.
I mean, personally, on that list right there, and
I've
would
got four names highlighted.
The two guys, I mean, if I'm going to go after two, I know you're saying don't draft an offensive lineman, but I'm going to give you my two names, and then I'll tell you why, because I think if we could get these two, I would say then we could turn, and then we could draft a lineman, and I would tell you why. I'd say if you could draft...
If it's the one offensive lineman we're going to talk about.
If we can get Connor Williams from Dallas.
Okay.
And if we can get Brandon Scherer from Washington.
Okay.
And then we obviously re-sign Riley Reiff.
Yep.
Then you can, in turn, draft, if he's available, Linderbaum from Iowa.
I would be fine with that, but everything I'm seeing, it doesn't look like he's going
to
be available.
No. Most mock drafts now, he's moved all the way up to be like the 13th, 14th draft pick now. I know.
But that's the beauty of free agency here, because if we are able to say we get Ryan Jensen, he comes here from Tampa Bay, which I keep seeing, you know, his name popping up here connected with the Bengals. If that's the case, okay, then you don't need to draft Linderbaum. We've got our center. You can move Trey Hopkins if you're going to keep him. You can move Trey to guard, where he was pretty darn successful as a guard. So
I was just going to say you can move him over to left guard, and then obviously also sign Scherff.
And here's the thing: I've got the four names I've highlighted are Armstead. I think if you get him as a tackle, then you can move. You can move Jonah around, and you can even move Riley Reiff around. It depends on how you want to finagle that. As a tackle, he would be the one tackle I would truly go after. Ryan Jensen, I would get him as your center, like I said, and then you're able to move Trey Hopkins, you know, to either guard spot. And then, like I said, Brandon Scherff or Laken Tomlinson, those are the two that I've got highlighted as guards. If you can get one of those guys and – like I said, or either Armstead and Jensen, you have completely set this team up for success moving forward. Because, and I had heard this, Paul Danner Jr., who covers the Cincinnati Bengals for The Athletic. Paul, he's great. If you've ever read his stuff, Paul Danner Jr. is fantastic. And he was on with Mo Egger. I'm going to say it was on Monday of last week. His plan of attack was perfect and was something I completely agree with, and I want to hear your mentality on it. Basically, it's a flip-flop mentality. You are going to attack the offense in free agency, which is what, you know, last couple seasons the Bengals have dumped over $100+ million in the defense, signing guys like Chidobe Awuzie, Mike Hilton, DJ Reader, Larry Ogunjobi.
Trey Waynes.
It was a trade. Yeah, Trey Waynes. Guys, I mean, the Trey Waynes deal didn't work out, but you still went out and you spent the money on guys that were upgrades to that position. So you flip-flop that mentality. The Bengals spend that money and go for offense. Spend all that money in offense and go for that. You spend that $100+ million overall in offense. You got $70 million in cap space this year to deal with. You can sign some good guys with that money. And then you build the defense. You build depth through the draft. That's what you got to do. Your thoughts on that? Because I think it's
idea. I like that idea because we're still in a good window. Because we still have quite a few years. We have like 3 years left with T. Higgins. We still have 4 years left with Jamar Chase. We have 3 years left with Burrow. I mean, Logan Wilson still has another 3 years too before all these guys come up on their next deal, before their, you know, their big deal comes up. So we can afford to go out there and spend all this money right now on these guys, and we can restructure them later once we have to, you know, re-sign Burrow, Chase, and so on and so forth. But we can swing for the fences right now. Like you said, I'm all for that. Go spend $15 million a year on Brandon Scherff. You know, spend $16 million a year on Ryan Jensen. I'm all for it.
Because here's the thing. You brought up the contracts that are, you know, our rookie deals. That's what's worrisome here. We've got a 3-year window right now to really truly win a championship.
Yep.
With this group of people or with this group of players right now. 3 years, because Burrow, his contract's coming up in 3 years. After that, that dude is going to command a Brinks truck. And the Bengals have got to pay him that Brinks truck. They got to give him that Brinks truck.
Yep.
So you have a certain window. That's what was painful about this loss was it was right there. It was right there. And they couldn't get it done, unfortunately.
And so I mean, now I'm hoping Burrow turns out to be more like Tom Brady than like some other guys, because Tom Brady was always willing to take less money so they could bring in more guys. And I hope Burrow turns out to be that type of guy, because it's helpful, because Tom Brady has never been one of the top five paid quarterbacks in the NFL. He's never been. He's always been, you know, anywhere between 8 and 12, 8 and 15. He's been right there, because he always wanted to have the ability to sign other players. I'm hoping Burrow does the same thing. I know he's going to get his money, but I'm hoping he doesn't want to go over the top. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
And set a new record to be the highest paid quarterback of all time. We don't need that.
Because that's going to financially cripple the team. How do you expect to win a championship if, you know, you're paying one guy $40 million a year?
Yeah, because I mean,
it's not going to, it doesn't benefit anybody.
No, because I mean, if Burrow gets $40 million, let's be honest here. Let's say he gets $40 million, which is pretty much the going rate for most quarterbacks now.
Yeah.
And then Jamar Chase's deal comes up. Jamar Chase is going to be an $18 to $22 million a year contract wide receiver.
Yep.
T. Higgins is going to be 15 to 18. This is when it starts to get a little, you know, rough.
Yeah, it's great now, but you got to look at the reality of it coming up. That's the scary part. So, you know, we'll see, but that's how I would attack it, because I think if you're able to get the depth, you know, for this team in the draft and attack the – the beauty of it, like I said, is they have a lot of cap space to deal with. That works out beautifully. So, you know, you can really do, you know, you can really attack some things, you know, that way. Moving over to the defensive side of the ball. Interior defensive line, they've got DJ Jones, Akeem Hicks, BJ Hill, Calais Campbell, Quentin Jefferson, Solomon Thomas, Linval Joseph, Sheldon Richardson, Jerron Reed, and Malik Jackson are the top 10 interior defensive linemen.
They don't last Larry?
They did not. No, they did not. That kind of surprised me.
How is that possible? He's way better than BJ Hill.
Yeah, but here's the thing. If I'm taking either one, I'm taking BJ Hill.
BJ's going to be cheaper. He'll be cheaper, yeah.
Exactly. That's the only reason I say that. Plus, he was, you know, we acquired him via trade. So, you know, even though it's already paid off, you know, trade wise, it's, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just not, it's better to do it, you know.
Again, I miss Billy Price.
Of course you do. Of course you do. but I think that one, I think, you know, one of those two guys you got to bring back, like we had already touched on.
Yeah.
Edge rushers, I think we're good there.
I personally think with edge rushers, I think we'll end up drafting somebody personally.
That's what I say, yeah. Because, I mean, the names listed, Chandler Jones, yes, please. Von Miller, yes, please. Jadeveon Clowney, I'll take him. Randy Gregory, Harold Landry, Hassan Reddick, Manuel Ogba, Justin Houston, Jerry Hughes, and Melvin Ingram. Now, I would take all of those guys.
Jadeveon Clowney, this is what – I don't know if you've heard this, but I was listening to NFL Network today. The rumors that they're hearing that is that the Jacksonville Jaguars are going to, you know, spend a lot of money this offseason. They have money, and that the two people they're going to throw massive money at are Jadeveon Clowney, and they're going to attempt to throw one of the highest deals of all time to anybody, to Davante Adams.
I'm intrigued.
It'll be interesting, because they have the money to they have the money to do it, and they want to give a really good wide receiver to Trevor Lawrence, and Devontae Adams would be that guy.
Well, he would definitely be that guy.
And then they want to get a guy who could be like the face of the defense, who Clowney would be. So it'll be interesting to see if the Jags can pull this off. I'm actually excited to see if they do it.
I know that would be impressive.
Good on them.
So, ooh, man, no kidding. Turning back on linebackers. Now, I don't think the Bengals will be in on any of these guys either. We're pretty good in terms of linebacker. We do need depth, but, you know, with Logan Wilson, Jermaine Pratt, and Joseph Osai, who can fill the linebacker and edge position, sort of like a Von Miller type, you know, with him coming back, oh,
you're forgetting about Akeem Gaithers Davis and Marcus Bailey. Those guys are all really good. I mean, linebackers position, I'm not worried about it at all.
Yeah, let's skip over that. Now they're talking about defensive backs here. Now they've got safeties and corners all listed. They've got Jesse Bates, number one overall. Obviously, he's the best one out there. Let's be real. He's going to come back. Whether they tag him or they sign him long term, Jesse Bates is coming back. So we don't have to worry about that. They've got J.C. Jackson, corner, Tyron Matthew, safety, Marcus Williams, safety, Carlton Davis, corner, Stephen Gilmore, corner, Darius Williams, corner, Quandre Diggs, safety, Casey Hayward, corner, and Marcus May, safety, are all listed here.
J.C. Jackson's going to make massive money.
That dude's going to get paid. I would love him, but – I think realistically, a Stephen Gilmore would be good along with
because technically we just need a replacement for Eli Apple is what we need.
And I think Eli Apple, I think he comes back.
I do. So, I think he will. I think he'll come back in another 1 year deal. But we need another guy essentially to replace him because, and I'm not saying we're replacing Eli, but I'm saying Eli Apple essentially he replaced Trey Waynes.
Yes.
So we need
so
a guy.
So he's taking that position, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. So you're replacing Eli Apple at that spot. So, I mean, we need some. I mean, Stephon Gilmore would be a huge hit. And I think we could get him at a cheaper rate, too, because he's older now.
I think you could. And then, like I said, the other one, Casey Hayward would be one that would – he would intrigue me a little bit as well from the Raiders.
I was going to say, yep, absolutely.
So, I know it's going to be interesting. And as the draft moves closer – you know, we'll definitely do a couple more podcasts to, you know, in terms of checking out the draft. And then once free agency really gets going, you have the legal tampering period coming up here. And then, like I said, then you have free agency. We'll take a look at, you know, as things start to come out a little more, we will do another podcast, you know, really touching on all that kind of stuff there to really discuss and kind of get into it deeper than what we did here. But, you know, Nick, man, it was a lot of fun. You know, doing this, you know, over the last couple of weeks, especially during the playoffs and this incredible run to the Super Bowl, a lot of fun. Again, thank you so much, man, for doing it with me here. And, you know, obviously, you know, we'll be doing a lot more podcasts coming up here, but, I appreciate it, man. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, bud.
Hey, no problem, man. No problem. And as always, make sure you guys follow us on Twitter at I am Chris Asbrock and at IS Cincy. And you can follow Nick as well at CincyZZ. And as always, like I said, you make sure you check out the website at www.iscincy.com. And make sure you check out, again, our new partners with Dark Hawk Nutrition. Make sure you check out darkhawknutrition.com. And again, their pre-workout protein, creatine, and other products are produced in FDA-approved facilities, third-party tested for quality, and are guaranteed clean. They are the next evolution in sports supplements, and make sure you use the code IMPACT for 15% off of your entire selection at darkhawknutrition.com. Again, thank you guys so much, and we will be back within the next couple weeks to take a look at free agency and the draft moving forward. Nick, my man, thank you so much. And we will talk to you later on.